with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard. It's Monday. It's the 14th day of January 2013. We are live from Washington, D.C. We're at the headquarters of the 8th Campaign, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign. And I'm kind of tweaking levels on the fly. So your patience is appreciated. Kind of an improv situation here. Had to get out of town before we had a piece of technology that we were waiting for in the mail that was kindly provided by the Horn family. Unfortunately, the Postal Service didn't quite meet their delivery date, their projected delivery date. So we're working around it, but by next week when we're back here, we'll have that all sorted out. This is the Horn, Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. We like to call what we do here conversation radio, as opposed to Rush Edges love you. Well, that's enough about you. Let's talk about me. Yeah, what's the point? No, conversation radio is something very, very special. And, well, if you stick with us long enough, you'll find out why. By the way, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday, and we have a lot of Morans lined up. We've got a couple of nominations coming in from our buddy Marty out in California. And we've got nominations coming in by Facebook. Fritz has one here that is just, well, it's just precious. And I can't wait to get to that. What else? It's not really a Moran thing. This is mean and hateful, but I think at some point along the way we have to talk about Aaron Swartz. Because what was done to him and what he was driven to is just plain evil. I think that's the appropriate word. We're going to program notes, just so everybody can keep up with all of this. We're up here in part, how to put this, the Ake campaign. The Appalachian, and particularly the legislation, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, was one of the last great projects of a truly great environmental advocate. I'm speaking of Joan Mulhern of Earth Justice. Joan helped us immensely and immeasurably in pulling together the law that we wanted in order to try to bring about some modicum of relief to suffering Appalachia. Joan passed away last month, and her memorial is tomorrow evening. So there will be no live show tomorrow evening. I do anticipate having a live show Wednesday evening and Thursday evening. And then, depending on how the trip goes on Friday, perhaps a live show on Friday evening, although that one's kind of iffy. Then everything goes kind of sideways. We've got a Prism West Virginia American History chat. You know, the new semester is upon us, and this semester's course is in the history of American foreign policy. So we've got a chat coming on next Saturday from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That'll all be visible at PrismWV, PrismWV.org. And also, in response to Richard's query last week, I'm working on trying to figure out a way to get him all the Prism audio only, without the video attached. So then, on either Sunday or Tuesday, and I'll explain why, we turn around and come back to Washington, D.C., for more work on the AIC Act, and as well, then at the end of that week, I'm traveling again, and so no show Friday, the 25th. No, I'm sorry. What day is that? Yeah, no show Friday the 25th, and no show Monday the 28th. Then. We can expect shows on the 29th and the 30th. And on the 31st of January and the 1st of February, we will be broadcasting live again from Washington, D.C., from the Families USA Health Action Conference, just a couple of blocks from where I am now. So you can see that it's going to be really, really quite busy. But I think we've got most of the technology worked out so that we can have a fully integrated, typical, normal show. I'm here in Washington, D.C. God's in his heaven. And more importantly, Agnes is in the studio. So here's how it works when we get down to the conversation part of the whole shebang. Everything is as normal, except for one thing. We won't be doing any Skype calls this evening. Because that's how I'm connected to Agnes, and we can't get more than one Skype thing going at a time. So the ordinary phone lines will be in play. That's area code 304-658-3333. 304-658-3333. Email, of course, comes into the same old place it always does, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid @gmail.com. You can also reach me on Twitter, and you can reach me on Facebook, in which both cases are simply BobKincaid, Bob Kincaid. I feel like we spend half the show just trying to sort out the social media, for God's sakes. So that takes care of all of that. We caught up a little bit, but not nearly as much as we needed to with the hole that we're in. And so I'll just remind you at the beginning of this program, and I haven't had a note yet, by the way, separate topic. Sometimes I'm so ADD, and that's not a joke. Look, a squirrel. What? I hope Kim and Matthew had a wonderful wedding this past Saturday, and we'll be looking for an update and photos as soon as they deem it appropriate. That just warmed my heart. It absolutely did. Thank you very kindly. Notes coming in saying that the audio is clean and clear. Our chief engineer, John Fox, in Australia, telling me that we're all good and square. Note coming in from Dr. John to the same effect, that we're sounding good via the TuneIn app. TuneIn Radio is one of the apps you can use on your smartphone device. If you get the pro version, you can even record the program and maybe even send it or share it or tell folks what you're listening to. Now, let's see. There's the TuneIn app. There's also, of course, Stitcher and Dar.fm, things like that. The RSS feed for the podcast is at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And I mentioned our chief engineer, John Fox. If I started now and didn't stop until sometime next year, I could never adequately describe the amount of work John puts into this whole affair. We took a hit on the Horn website on Saturday, and it knocked us for a loop, and John has been going hammer and tongs at bringing that back up to speed. And he's done a magnificent job if you look over at headonradionetwork.com. So many thanks to John Fox. Now, I did say that we're in a bit of a hole, this all operates on listener support. So any help is much appreciated help. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And the snail mail address is there as well. And that's how we get, you know, what we raised in December makes January possible. What we raise in January makes February possible. And we are very nearly at the halfway point of January. Okay, is that all taken care of now? God, I hope so. I mentioned this is Moran Monday. And I don't think I've got the Moran Monday music, so we'll just have to figure out a way to get along without it. But that's okay, because I think the Morans, well, the Morans can take care of themselves, as evidenced, well, by stuff like this. I mean, the first time I saw this, I wondered, is this a joke? This can't be real. What am I talking about? I'm talking about a little something that happened, you know, naturally happened over at Radio Rwanda Fox News. I really hope this audio plays because I want you to hear it. Everybody knows that I am not a math whiz. I mean, there's no debate. But even I, having heard this audio, shook my head and heard the marbles rattling. This is too much.
So math has a little bias. No, really. Check out a clip from the Five.
But even worse is the subtle way some textbooks are pushing the liberal agenda. Take, for example, Scholastic Books. They call themselves the world's leading publisher of children's books, so it's likely that your kid is learning from one of their textbooks. Check out the wording of this algebra lesson. Can you get this? Which camera? Are you on number six? Distribute the wealth, or distribute a property of addition and multiplication. This is for grades 3 through 6. Distribute the wealth with the lovely rich girl with a big old bag of money handing some money out. So as you folks, I do it every year at Parent-Teacher Night. You have to read your kids' textbooks. Find out what's being taught. If you see a bias, make sure you explain it to your kids, and by all means, tell your teachers you're on it.
Those of you who forgot the distributive property, it's just a general property for basic algebra. It says z times the quantity x plus y is equal to zx plus zy. You need it to maybe solve some very basic equations. It's called the distributive property because the first term distributes among the quantity. It's not some mathematical plot to liberally indoctrinate the masses. That's just what it is. Words have multiple meanings. And if this is some liberal conspiracy, it's a pretty bad one. I mean, most people don't say, we're going to distribute the wealth, because that's what everyone does. I mean,
it goes beyond that. What the right-wingers are supposed to be upset about is us redistributing the wealth. Yeah, really. Can you really beat that for an opening to Moran Monday? Fox News is now accusing mathematics of being liberal. Hey, Ferg. Do you remember the distributive property of multiplication?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, did you know you were being taught liberalism while you were busily not learning the distributive property of multiplication?
I don't know why that ties in.
Because it's socialism.
Oh, math is socialism.
Well, yeah, and after all, it's an Arabic, algebra is an Arabic word.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I guess it's that weird.
That's what it is. It's Sharia mathematics.
It looks like it's more than
it. Well, and many of you probably understand this much better than I, but z times x plus y is the same thing as saying z times x plus z times y. I even understand that concept. Do you begin to comprehend what a low freaking threshold that is for me to understand that concept? That's a threshold that's lower than your average curbside. But it's too much for Fox. Oh, you've got to go. I go to Parent-Teacher Night every year. You've got to go over this. You got to know what they're going to try to teach your children. Communism. Socialism. They're fulminating about it. Is it any wonder, then? That President Not Sure had to get on the TV today and explain about how he was not going to get pulled in. You know, we were talking about this last night. Ferg and I are not the only ones up here. Our buddy Appalachian hero Mickey McCoy, proprietor of the wonderful Metrobilly Cafe in Inez, Kentucky, is here as well. He came up. It made a pot of chicken and wild rice and mushroom soup for the ages. Oh, it's good. Been eating soup all day. It's good soup weather. But we were talking about it earlier in the day. And the fact of the matter is, if you've never been to the zoo, and you go to the zoo, the first time you go to the zoo, you will more than likely go to the monkey house. And there at the Monkey House, you will probably see, and hopefully not directly be affected by, simians of some sort flinging poo. And once you've seen the poo-flinging spectacle once, if you ever go to another zoo, you'll give a trip to the Monkey House a second thought before you go in. Well, speaking of morans, isn't that kind of where we are as far as the House of Representatives, the majority in the House of Representatives, the Congress of the United States is concerned? Dr. John writing in says, yes, yes, liberal bias in math problems. And I bet the girl with the big bag of money Fox guy was talking about was colored white, too. It's a conspiracy, I tell you. Now, excuse me while I go buy gold high so I can sell it low. There's never, hey, Dr. John, buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation in these uncertain economic times. Buy gold now. Gold is your best friend. Jesus. Yeah, but she was. She absolutely was. A little white girl with a bag of money. How did you know? So, really, that's just a start. Who was that? Greg Gutfeld? Thank God for Rupert Murdoch and Fox out there protecting our children against socialist maxims and axioms and theorems and Wait till they start reading about what the Pythagoreans believed. Hint. They were into a three-sided object, but it wasn't a trinity. A little bit of house cleaning to take care of, or housekeeping. I try to keep up with the mail as best I can. Had an email from our buddy Patrick in Germany, who wrote in to say, he said he's catching up with some older podcasts, and he said, back on January 2nd, I think, you were talking about the Muslim cleric that was issuing the order for Syrian freedom fighters to gang rape Syrian women, which turned out to be a BS story, by the way. Thank you to Sandra for pointing that out. But Patrick notes that then Jim called and said that he is shocked, was shocked by what was going on, and then said it's not like the Russians entering Berlin, and at least they had a reason to do it. And Patrick rightly calls me on it and says, and you just let it pass. And I don't want to necessarily open this discussion, but I do want to say that I was wrong in not addressing that. But we've shown, or we have evinced in the last week or so, that there are some issues relating to that horrible, horrible crime that still need to be worked out. And I do apologize for letting that pass because I really should have challenged it. I should have challenged that statement. Because, no, there is never a good excuse for sexual assault. Never. Not once. Ever. You know, the Roman national myth in that ancient culture was deeply invested in its origins in something that they called the rape of the Sabine women. You can look it up if you want to. But it seems to me that if your origin myth involves rape, you're going to have some cultural problems coming at you later. So my apologies, and I appreciate Patrick pointing out that miscue on my part. Now, as far as the remainder of Moran Monday is concerned, or not the remainder, but more of it, the nominations have been flying fast and furious all weekend long. I think it was our dear friend Faith who said that the Morans were stacking up like cordwood. Sparky, our chat room moderator, sent this story along over the weekend. It's a beauty, too. You know, just a little bit ago, we were talking about a couple of the apps you can get for your smartphone that help you, for instance, listen to this program just like you'd listen to radio on the move. You know, you don't have to be sitting next to a computer anymore, even to listen live. There's apps coming out all the time. So why should we be surprised if one of those apps is coming from the National Rifle Association? Fine folks that they are. This isn't quite as benign as, say, the TuneIn app. No. No, this is an app for your smartphone that is a virtual shooting range. And it's designed for 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds. And it's all full of just Jim Dandy advice for young shooters. Keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. And then know your target and what is beyond it. And get your hands off my gun, you filthy ape. Right? No, that one's not on there. It'll take you straight to the NRA website. Oh, it's a dandy little app. You can either go to an indoor or an outdoor range on this NRA smartphone target practice app. And you're not necessarily just shooting some virtual 6-gun. No, in the NRA children's app, the default weapon is an M16. But if you pay money to the NRA, you can upgrade your weapon to an AK, notice it's an upgrade, to an AK-47 or an MK-11. Remember, this is marketed toward children. Children. Indoor range or outdoor range, either one. I feel better already, don't you? No, I didn't think so. Morans. iPhone apps. So children can practice with their virtual M16s. Is it just me, or were they complaining about, was the NRA complaining just a week or so ago about violent video games? Here's one by the NRA. No, no, this isn't a violent video game because you're just target practicing, right? There is a fascinating element to their shooting range. The graphics for the indoor range are basically coffin-shaped. They have red dots where the head would be and another red dot where the heart would be. So you can make sure that little Junior is really getting proficient making that kill shot. What, the marketing department didn't get the memo about how our problem isn't guns, it's crazy children? I would submit to you that the problem isn't crazy children. And crazy is probably an unfair word. No. The problem here among other places, resides with unhinged elected representatives. If you were to give an IQ test or maybe the Wunderlich test that the NFL uses at its training combine or its testing combine, you know, that thing's got a 50-point score, spread. You can go anywhere from 1 point to a 50. Only one athlete has ever scored a 50. But the Wunderlich is not just used by the NFL, it's used by in a wide variety of applications. Used in industry and advertising and anywhere that you want to find out how sharp your potential employee is, or your coworker, whatever. If you were to give the Wunderlich to, say, Tennessee's Marsha Blackburn, you reckon that would return a negative number? Because I can't imagine her being capable of generating a positive number on any sort of intelligence testing. I mean, they're stupid. And then there's Marsha Blackburn. Marsha Blackburn is worried about people losing the rights to their freedom. The freedom to keep military-style weapons around in case we have to go out and reclaim the wilderness from some sort of invader, right? As we like to say around home, Marsha Blackburn hadn't got enough brains to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. I'll bet you they say that in places like Texas, and maybe even Marsha Blackburn's own Tennessee. Now, I know we're having some audio problems with the playback side of the video here. But I want to try this, because it's kind of important. I'll never know why the booker who books guests for various Sunday programs, Meet the Prestitutes, This Week with George Snuffleupagus, State of the Onion on CNN, I wish it was the Onion, I'll never really understand the dark art that they practice. Because they wind up doing incredibly stupid things like booking Marsha Blackburn on State of the Union. Apparently somebody put out a press release somewhere that said Marsha Blackburn has had something to offer to the discussion. When it becomes abundantly obvious that she didn't. You could have put one of those chattering simians from the aforementioned monkey house in front of the camera, and it would have made as much sense as this. Because this is precious. Oh, you know what, Bob? It works a lot better when the channel isn't muted.
No.
What I'm hearing is that people want to make certain that, first of all, we protect the Second Amendment and their Second Amendment rights, protect their freedom.
Oh, this is not working.
Impede that. Also, I'm hearing from lots of teachers, mental health professionals, physicians, that we need to do a couple of things. Number one is to drill down on the mental health issue, and number two is to look at these psychiatric and psychotropic drugs, because that is many times linked to the individuals that carry out these crimes.
Now, hold on a minute. In case you didn't hear that, she said we need to do a couple of things. Number one is to drill down on the mental health issue. Right, because that's what the mentally ill need in this country is a good drilling. We need to drill down on the mental health issues. But number two, she says, is to look at the psychiatric and psychotropic drugs, because that is many times linked to the individuals who carry out these crimes. Do we, assuming it to be true, do we know what kind of drugs Lanza was on? Do we even know, did I miss stories that showed how much time he spent playing violent video games? Like, oh, I don't know, the NRA's target shooting app for iPhone? Because I don't remember that. But even assuming that to be accurate, well, do you remember last week when for some considerable period of time, we listened to that absolutely babblicious audio from Glenn Beck? Remember that? And at one point in time, he was screaming to Piers Morgan about the murder pills and the suicide drugs. And yet, lo and behold, here we are. And CNN and the Republican Party and the NRA are trying to put a better face on the same argument. Suicide drugs.
They're also wanting to make certain that we begin to get in behind these video games. I watched a couple of these last night in preparation for this segment, and Candy, as a mother and a grandmother, I was astounded with some of the things that I was seeing on call to duty. And, of course, we know the Norway shooter would go in and use that as target practice. I mean, you know, this is something where...
Wait, you mean a mass murderer, Marsha? Oh, my nose. You mean, Marsha, that Anders Breivik used a video game as target practice for the murder he would later commit? Goodness me. You know, the prison system in Norway is considerably more humane than ours is here. Maybe Anders Breivik is allowed to have a smartphone. And if he is, can't you imagine how thrilled he'll be to know that there's a game that's portable now on your smartphone that you can use for target practice? And you know it's got to be good, because it's brought to you by the National Rifle Association. And I realize, and I apologize, that the audio is not so good. We're working on this issue, but we're not quite there yet. But Granny Marsha wants to work on mental health and the Alex Jones suicide pills. And she's worried about video games. But the one thing she's not worried about, go figure, firearms.
Number two, let's protect our freedoms and let's put these issues on the table and have a good, solid conversation about it.
Where's this going?
I think the White House is still interested in a perfect world for an assault weapons ban, but there's a lot of evidence out there that, A, it didn't necessarily work last time, but they are more interested in getting something accomplished. So I think that we'll probably see that as part of the vice president's proposal, but it's not going to be the be-all and end-all. If that doesn't happen, that's not going to sort of bring down the whole effort. I think that the president is committed to this, and I think, you know, it is going to remain in some type of work on this. Probably background checks, probably the ammunition clips, but there's going to be another shooting, probably, sadly. So this is going to stay in the consciousness, I think. I don't think this is going to recede sort of into our memory.
But the problem is, you know, it could be a hammer, a hatchet, a car, a gun.
The hammers and the hatches and cars aren't quite as fast as those clips.
You're still needing to look at this mental health, and you have to make certain that you're protecting an individual's rights.
This is a Republican who hates Obamacare, by the way. Did I mention that? And you still have to look at this mental health. The mental health crisis that exists in this country has everything to do with the Republican Party, because the Republican Party doesn't care about mental health. I mean, please. This is not that complicated. The Republican Party does not care about mental health. It does not care about physical health. It does not care about the health of anyone who makes less than, $500,000 a year. And even that's probably slumming among most of your average Republicans. This mental health. Why does that sound so stilted to me? Sorry, Clayton. Clayton, the militant sociologist, says, I just made him incredibly ill. Not sure which part that was. Dr. John pointing out, I was hoping in regard to the NRA target shooting app, Target Practice app. I was hoping the internets would come through and the reviews would mercilessly troll the NRA. Sadly, not yet. In fact, one leading light notes, you should save money and buy real ammo. What? Dr. John also asks, since when is the right wing concerned about mental health? Yeah, what does God need with a starship? After years of funding for treatment, research, and beds, this is their solution, asked Dr. John. It's deflection, the same sort that obtains any time a mass shooting occurs. It's instantly, this was an isolated individual who was insane, i.e., it was not a natural outgrowth of fear-mongering media, racism, poverty, and our culture's obsession with the myth of the rugged individual. Wah, wah, wah. Right? The rugged individual out there going quietly mad on the prairie until he's talking to the bison or whatnot. If there's a mental health crisis in this country, it's because the Republicans created it. Just like there's an economic crisis in this country, and it's because Republicans created it. Just like there's a crisis. I kind of dare and defy anybody to show me a progressively created crisis.
Oh, what about Medicare?
It's not a crisis. It's not a crisis. Ron writes in and he says, yesterday I went to Barnes & Noble to pick up my copy of Performance VW. And what did I find on the rack? Next to the automotive magazines where they stock the gun publications, I saw a glossy special edition magazine entitled The Book of the AR-15. This was obviously published after the Sandy Hook massacre. Bob, what in the hell is the matter with these gun-loving idiots? The magazine was without a doubt published to profit from the Sandy Hook disaster. Nothing is beneath these people. P.S., Ron says, remember, all these mass killers were law-abiding citizens. No. The official phrase, Ron, you got to write this down, lawful gun owners. Now, if you want to make it interesting, when you go to type that or on the interweb tubes or whatever, type parentheses L close parenthesis awful, and that way awful gun owners. Every last one of them, every last firearm that's been used in a mass shooting was a lawful firearm too. Oh, did I misspeak? That's funny. Dr. Freud. Michael writes in and says, did you misspeak Glenn Beck for Alex Jones re mass murder pills, etc. on CNN? Can't tell your morons without a program, no, and even then you can't tell them much. You know the drill, Michael. I meant to say Alex Jones, really. But they are all pretty much crazier than a sprayed roach. Thank you for pointing that out. I'm a little bit scatterbrained. We were pretty much right up against things trying to get the show on the air this evening. So, yeah, my head was in several different places. Sorry, periodically I have to check all the stuff to make sure all the packets are passing and the electrons are moving the way we'd like them to. Jack reminds me writes in from Shreveport. He says, today, my dose of AM radio in the car was Hannity interviewing Coulter. Oh, my God. That's like acid interviewing horse tranquilizer. In almost the same sentence, Jack says, while mentioning freedoms for gun nuts, they wanted to just institutionalize anyone with mental illness. They didn't worry at all about freedoms or due process for people with illnesses. No. No, due process doesn't matter unless it's them. Constitutional rights don't matter unless it's them. By the way, thank you for the kind contribution that has rolled in. That puts us at, we're 10 down and 140 to go to make this evening's fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly. Texas Betsy pointing out, now that's the source of our mental health care crisis. Hannity interviews Coulter. Yeah, it kind of makes me see the walls start breathing, too. I told you we were going to be busy here this Moran Monday. We can't ban guns, says Granny Marsha Blackburn. I don't mean ban guns. We can't ban assault weapons. I don't want anybody's shotguns banned or 30-06 or... No. Like I told you before, the other night, I've been rereading Joe Bagent's magnificent Deer Hunting with Jesus. I thought I would find something perhaps enlightening on the on that and a number of other topics, and so yeah, I did reread it, and I've been tweeting a little bit of it here and there. You know, that book sold like hotcakes all over the world. Here, it sold respectably, but I mean, it didn't sell on the level of, say, yeah, never mind. But he talks about the Appalachian gun culture from which he came. And shotguns and rifles that were kept in the family literally through generations. Because they did feed the family in hard times. And I don't take issue with any of that. But when Marsha Blackburn says that we can't do anything about high-capacity magazines and the firearms that shoot them, or not that they'll shoot the magazines, but shoot the stuff in the magazines, she says there's no point to do it because, well, the problem is with this mental illness is it might not be a gun. It could be a hammer, or a hatchet, or a car. Yeah, Marsha, or it could very easily be, oh, I don't know, let's pick something else out. How about if it's a brick? Brick would, a pipe wrench. How about if it's Colonel Mustard in the billiard room with the candlestick? Marsha Blackburn would probably think I was saying something mean about a veteran if we told her about Colonel Mustard. God. No, Moran Monday is going to be plenty good busy. Marty asking, what's worse, Hannity and Coulter or Jim Harbaugh? I think it's a wash. Marty nominated at the beginning of the program. Marty nominated Denver Broncos head football coach John Fox. Not our John Fox, head football coach John Fox out in Denver. for having Peyton Manning kneel on the effing football field after giving up a lead with about 40 seconds left. Marty's a Broncos fan. I was conflicted with that game, I admit. Yeah, I saw somebody else, I forget who it was, go zipping into the end zone for a touchdown. I forget which game. And he pointed up at the sky, and he crossed himself, and he waved hi to Jesus. No. But he did. Morans. Yeah, isn't that somewhere in, like, Matthew, and Jesus said, the morans ye have always with ye? Yeah. Well, we got him with us this evening, too. Yeah, coffin-shaped targets. Wow. But that's not all. We've got professional level moranity operating here. We've got the obligatory hissy fit from the right wing. If you're not very, very nice, I'm going to make you listen to a Brian Fisher clip. Well, even if you are. And sometimes I do, I admit, sometimes I do regret the fact that this is not on video, because I would like to just take about, a respectable 30 seconds so that we could all have a good laugh at this monumental photograph of America's libertarian ophthalmologist, Rand Paul. I'm rich. I'm comfortably well off. I'm socially secure. Ophthalmologists should be well paid because they deserve a happy lifestyle. Rand Paul done went to Israel. And it wasn't nearly as funny as when Mark Twain did it. Rand Paul went to Israel, and took a dip in the Dead Sea. And so I have before me here a photograph. It's also on my Facebook page if you want to go and look at it. I have here a photograph of Rand Paul having rubbed himself down with mud. He didn't have to go all the way to the Dead Sea for that. He could have probably just gone online and ordered some Sea of Galilee mud mask from Pat Robertson. He's been importing this stuff for ages now. Now he's all rubbed up with mud. Kevin from Colorado Springs has sent in his nomination for Moran Monday. His nominee is Representative Steve Stockman, Republican of Texas, who is threatening impeachment of the president if the president uses executive orders to implement any sort of gun control. Kevin says he, along with Marsha Blackburn and the rest of these teabagging nuts, are the ones who are mentally ill, and the whole lot of them should be committed to a very padded room with the crayons between their toes. Yes, purple. But at this point in time, there's a certain element inside the House of Representatives that would impeach Barack Obama over a cold cup of coffee. They're looking for something to impeach over. Ron and Raleigh, you're more curious. I would never ask this question. Ron and Raleigh wants to know of libertarian ophthalmologist Senator Rand Paul, wants to know if he was buck naked. He may have been buck wild. No, that's West Virginia. Well, he was wearing some very unflattering board shorts. And mud. Did I mention he was wearing mud? Yeah. Beautiful, ain't it? So that's where we find ourselves at the close of the top of the program, close of the first hour. This is, however, Conversation Radio, and you're the other half of the conversation. So if you want to get involved, dial 304-658-3333. 304-658-3333. And in fact, we'll get the conversation started in the second hour. A very kind thank you to our friend, the Angry Architect, who just pushed us considerably further toward making this evening's fundraising goal. That is very kindly appreciated. And we find now, hey, we're less than $50 away from making tonight's goal, which would be awesome. So let's take a break. Come back. Your calls. Agnes will be fielding them and letting me know you're there. If you're already on hold, please stay that way. And we'll get this all rolling in very short order. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime, sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double ball time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces. Coming in out of the rain, they hear the jazz go down. Competition in other places. But the horns keep blowing that sound. Way on down south. Way on down south. London town. You check out Guitar George. He knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't want to make them cry or sing. If an old guitar is all he can afford, when he gets up under the lights, play his thing. And Harry doesn't mind if he doesn't. Friday night with the Sultans, with the Sultans of Swing. Hey.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know, we drove up here yesterday with the air conditioner on in the car. No kidding. Can you imagine what a mess this would be? If global warming was really real and all this going on, I don't know what we'd do. I kid. Getting used to these settings and this sort of work around. Hopefully we'll get all of this sorted out when we get the nice piece of computer hardware that will make this all behave very, very soon. But at any rate, thank you for being around this evening. And thank you very much for helping us keep all of this going.
The phone number, of course, 304-658-3333. And Agnes tells me that we have Jim on the line. Are you there, Jim? Hello? Just a sec. Okay, I hope this isn't a technical problem. Let's go to John. Oh no. Not this again. Hey, John.
Hello?
Ah, there you are.
Oh, you got me and my dog?
I got you.
Oh, good deal. Listen, I wanted to first off, you were back in D.C. On the AIC Act, and I was wondering if you could summarize for us kind of what the developments of that are, and specifically if we need to reach back out to folks in Congress and what the name of the new resolution is, if it's changed, and all that stuff.
Thank you very much, John. That's a very good idea. I should have done that earlier. You know, when a Congress ends, all of its unfinished business dies with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, what had been introduced in the House of Representatives is H.R. 5959, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, died. As such, it has to be reintroduced. And part of the reason we're here is to carry on conversations to get it reintroduced, and it will be coming up for reintroduction probably in the week or so after the inauguration. So, yes, in answer to your other question, it is time to get active again. Everybody who reached out and contacted their elected representatives to get them to sign on to the AIC Act in the first place now has to get them to sign on again, and, of course, we've got 2 years to work with, and what that means is we've got a much more realistic chance of getting a whole lot more signatures on a whole lot more, from a whole lot more members of Congress. The other thing, though, is that because we've got a whole Congress to work with, we're taking the next step that had not been taken last Congress because of the shortness of time, and we are working on getting it introduced in the Senate. So now it's time to start talking to people in the Senate. And, in fact, we have a meeting this Wednesday, day after tomorrow, to talk about that very thing. So there are some good progressives in the Senate, obviously. People like Bernie Sanders, you know, if you're in Vermont, by all means contact Bernie Sanders. Tell him you want to see the AIC Act introduced in the Senate of the United States. There are a number of good folks. Oregon, you can contact Jeff Merkley. Obviously in California, you'd probably want to talk to Barbara Boxer. There's no bad senator to contact, so this is really going to be a full court press this time through, John.
Well, that's excellent. Now, is it good to do this? I mean, for instance, tomorrow, or would it be better to wait until there is a name and an introducing sponsor, or it just in terms of pure logistics, like what is it called? Whose office does it live in at this point? Not introduced. Things like that.
Where the House of Representatives is concerned, I think if you're one of those people who has a representative who's already who signed on in the last Congress, it would be a good idea to go ahead. You know, it's no harm in going ahead and saying, we hope it will be introduced soon, and we hope you will be on there just as you were before, and let's get this thing introduced with as many signatures on the first day as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where the Senate is concerned, since it's never been introduced, beginning now to agitate is just fine. And if folks will do what they've done in the past and say, hey, Bob, I've contacted Senator so-and-so, and then we can go into that office and say, we know you're getting responses from your constituents. Let's get with it.
Great. Excellent. And I gather, and I certainly believe that as this develops, you will keep us informed about sort of, you know, the name of it, the schedule, and all that stuff. Great.
Yes, indeed. No, it's going to be very exciting, and like I said, we're going to be really busy with this for quite some time, and that's kind of why it was important to get all of this working again as far as the equipment is concerned here, because I have a feeling we're going to be here quite a bit, because there's, you know, literally hundreds of people to contact in the House of Representatives, and there's 100 senators, at least what, 50, okay, 52 of whom are sane? So that gives you an idea of the amount of work to be done here. But one of the things I think that's really important in all of this, John, is that we are trying to characterize this as we've talked about before, as a human rights crisis, and mm-hmm. so a health crisis, and a health care crisis. And as such, I think we've got a much better messaging opportunity than other attempts have in the past.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Now, in your particular case, if I recall correctly, the guy who was the man who was your member of Congress up in New York retired, right?
Yeah, he retired, and his anointed successor did not win re-election. So there's a Republican there.
That's a mess.
You scratch Maurice Hinchey off, unfortunately.
Oh.
Yeah, but down here in North Carolina, I'll tell you, got kind of a blue doggy representative, but Senator Kay Hagan, her office is now on notice. They will be contacted. I guarantee it.
Excellent, excellent. And do I recall correctly? Is she the one? Who was religiously sleazed by her opponent? Wasn't that Elizabeth Dole a few years back?
Oh goodness, yeah, I don't recall that, and that was before I was here and as paying as much attention as possible. I'll look into that. I don't know. She on paper and on her site, she seems very, very good. So.
But I think the reason I mentioned that, John, is I think I recalled, you know, that she's a Sunday school teacher. Or has been in the past, and you know I think we've got something that really, to people who truly are believers of conscience, this bill speaks to that, because if you cannot stand up and speak out for innocent victims, then what can you? What can you complain about? Who can you stand up for? Does that make any sense?
Well, it does, and that approach might open doors that otherwise wouldn't be open. But I think that's a good approach too. I mean, ACAC.org is a great resource for folks who are prepping a call. You know, there's a lot of issues laid out very clearly that explains the genesis of the ad and some possible approaches you could take. So,
and speaking of which, I'm glad you mentioned that as well, John, because. I was talking about all the work that John Fox has been doing lately. Well, in addition to all the stuff that he has been doing just to get things squared away, with the Horns website, he has completely redesigned and rebuilt the ACACT website. And so if folks want to go to ACACT.org and have a look, I think folks will be impressed. This thing's beautiful, and it really is an absolute resource toolkit for how to go about talking about this. The science is there. There's a PDF printable fact sheet with photographs and statistics and text that you can print off and hand out to people even. So I'm glad you mentioned it, because it really ramps up the ability of people to become members of the ACT team, advocating in their own communities. It's all right there for them. There's even, and I think we're still testing a little bit of it, but there's even on the website, there is a contact your Congress, your congressional representative or senator widget that you can use to send an email.
Easy, easy.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Well, great. I'll be checking it out. No, we really greatly appreciate the work you're doing, and you know, we can certainly help out with that. If I could very quickly, can I throw out a nomination for tonight?
Oh, do please.
And historical.
Yes, indeed.
It is Representative Steve Stockman of the 36th Congressional District of Texas, who earlier this month introduced a bill to repeal the Gun-Free School Zones Act, because we need more guns in school.
Dear God.
Yeah.
And this is the guy that Kevin in Colorado Springs just mentioned a few minutes ago is threatening to impeach President Obama if he does anything via executive order.
Oh, is he? Oh, well, that's news to me. Although it doesn't surprise me, this guy is a piece of work. The 36th District is gerrymandered all to hell, but his base of support is south of Houston, a place called Clear Lake, which is like Tom DeLay territory, basically.
Ooh.
But the thing about Stockman, and you'll appreciate this, in 1994 he was elected to Congress, and he served a term or two. He defeated Jack Brooks. And I suspect you know who Jack Brooks is, but if you don't, you will. Jack Brooks was one of the longest serving ever Texas congressmen. He was a Marine in World War II. He was elected from my home district back in 1946 and served up until 94. And during his time in Congress, he was the ranking member and or chairman of the Judiciary Committee throughout the 60s and 70s. Which means he helped write the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and he drafted the Articles of Impeachment in the committee against Nixon. He was a lifelong friend and ally of LBJ. He was one of the few Southern congressmen who voted, you know, in favor of the civil rights legislation. And he was actually in the motorcade in Dallas when Kennedy was assassinated. In that famous picture of LBJ being sworn in, Jack Brooks is the man standing behind Jackie.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is the kind of guy that, you know, the Republicans really need to oppose. And so he bumped him off in 1994. I actually met this guy, Congressman Brooks, when I was a kid. You know, and I didn't appreciate that I was standing, you know, talking to someone who was a witness to history like this.
Wow.
And he died back in December, actually. He just recently passed away. So I thought that was an interesting confluence of events, because, you know, we got to get this basically liberal Texas congressman, we got to get him out, got to bump him off with the Stockman guy, who then, once he gets reelected, says, yeah, well, we need more guns in the schools. So anyway, there's my nomination.
that's just... Oh, maybe yeah, he's probably got connections to the NRA, Dr. John. I mean, maybe he can get little NRA target shooting apps for all the youngins until they can start bringing their own shooting guns to school.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's part of the plan. It all makes perfect sense. Yeah. This is where the house has fallen, I guess. You know, what a shame.
Well, did you happen to see any of the video from Barack Obama's, President Obama's press conference this afternoon or this morning?
Oh, is this where he basically said he supports, you know, some of what's probably going to come out of this Biden report?
Well, what he talked about the House and basically said that he does not intend to negotiate with the House over the House's constitutionally imposed duties.
Mm-hmm.
And you could almost, it seemed to me, you could almost see the frustration emanating from him, like, I don't know, heat waves off a hot Texas piece of highway. Because I was reminded of this when you mentioned, you know, the state of where the House is now. Even after that, there were people declaring that, well, heck yeah, we're going to default the government. Government's the problem. We're going to let the government shut down. And Obama was sitting there saying, listen, if they don't do their job, Social Security checks don't go out. He said, soldiers don't get paid. The people that we pay to make sure that nuclear arms are not loose in the world don't get paid. And even after rattling all of those things off, the Republicans in Congress said, yeah, so.
Well, I mean, if he's frustrated at them, good. But sort of finally, I mean, welcome to the party, Mr. President, because we've been there for quite some time here. You know, and I mean that.
Oh, that's the absolute truth. And one of the reporters asked him. She said, "You told us the last time that you wouldn't negotiate with him either, and then you caved in. Why should we believe you now?" Not quite that sharply, but she wasn't very far from it.
Yeah.
And he sort of dissembled a little bit and said, "I told them I wouldn't do this and I didn't do that, but I did come to a negotiated blah blah, you know, some sort of agreement, blah 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 blah." And it didn't give me a real good feeling.
Yeah.
But what's he supposed to negotiate? He is not empowered to do a budget. The House is. The House has the purse strings in the Constitution. We haven't changed that, have we?
No, it's still the same. And I think that, you know, the last time they pulled this under Clinton, I mean, if I recall, the public opinion was very much, you know, blame Congress, not blame the president. You know, I guess there's that. I don't know what sort of comfort that gives if indeed, you know, checks don't go out and weapons don't get inspected and all that stuff.
Well, I guess I'm asking, John, do the House Republicans know something we don't know? Do they know that even if Social Security checks don't go out, that everybody sitting back in the home district is going to say, well, you know, it's because of that Kenyan Muslim socialist with the anti-colonialist attitude?
Well, okay, that's the joker in the deck. The difference here is that there is the race thing. But is that fair calculus? I mean, I think that's absurd, and I still have to cling to the idea that, you know, we are smart enough to see through that. But God, boy, that's cynical and awful.
It is, because in the midst of all of this, did you see the listing last week of all the things that Americans like better, have a better opinion of than Congress?
No. What was it, things like trench mouth and...
Lice.
Nice.
I'm not kidding. The American people have a higher opinion of lice than they do of Congress.
But you know how this works, though. It's always, and this is kind of one of those ways that they know if a poll is good or not, is that people hate Congress, but they like their congressperson.
And that is always where you get into trouble.
Right.
So, But see, that's even troubling to me, John, because does that mean that the entire district, well, obviously a majority of the district represented by, say, John Boehner, is sitting around weeping into their beer because they think he's a great leader who just is getting a raw deal?
Well, they may be, but I think better of them than the folks who are thinking that about Paul Brown or Virginia Fox or, you know, I mean, honestly,
well, but,
Boehner.
I'll take
Boehner over Brown any day.
Yeah, but that's still the same question, Dr. John. That's, the Steve King's district, this Stockman's district, Michelle Bachmann's district. We were talking about this just last night. The fact of the matter is, Michelle Bachmann was given pride of place. If you're the Speaker of the House, you get to say what's going to get introduced first in the brand new Congress. And John Boehner gave Michelle Bachmann pride of place to introduce the first bill. And the first bill she introduced was the 34th attempt to repeal Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
This, to me, says something. Because people try to make people try to make it out such that there are some sane Republicans out there. Who? Where?
Yeah.
Which ones? Point to them. You don't even have to say anything. Wouldn't want to startle them.
let him keep chasing this Tea Party caucus. I mean, it's a losing bet. You know, let them do it and keep it up and lose Texas and lose Georgia and lose Arizona eventually, and then the game's over. You know, they're a Southeastern party. Fine.
And I, yeah, they become that, yeah, that non-national party that Eisenhower was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Lord, how long does that take?
It's a painful transition, and it's going to suck very hard for the people there.
Well, you by virtue of what you do and have done, you have a far better grasp on mathematical concepts and statistical ideas than do I.
Whoa.
Well, I realize I'm damning with faint praise in saying that, John, but still. One of the things that just blows my mind is this thing that I've been reading lately that said that if you look at the House race as a mathematical aggregate, that in order to overcome gerrymandering, the entire popular vote, which Democrats won generally, there were more Democrat votes for members of the House of Representatives than there were Republicans. You know, it's just a raw number, right?
Right. Yeah.
But because of the way the gerrymandering has played out, Democrats would have to outpoll Republicans in excess of 7% in order to take back the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
Is that as statistically troubling as it seems like it probably should be, if I understood statistics as well as I should?
Well, today, yes. In 12 years or 20 years, no. Because of the way demographics and voting patterns are changing. And that's the hope, is that, you know, the country's getting younger, it's getting more diverse, it's getting really more progressive. And that's just kind of a fact. And I think, and honestly, I mean, I know his faults, I'm not praising the guy, but I think people, the somewhat more reasonable Republicans, people like Boehner, people like some of these media folks, realize that. And they're saying, look, we've got to back off the rhetoric. We've got to back off the anti-women. We've got to back off the anti-Latino. And that's an attempt to sort of capture some of the change in demographic, but it's going to be too little too late, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I just hope, well, who was the politician who said the people have spoken? God damn them.
Pretty much anyone, I would imagine.
I hope it doesn't turn out to be one of those situations, and they don't figure out a way to steal it a generation from now. But I did find that list, and it was done, the poll was done by Public Policy Polling, okay? So they do probably understand a little bit of the statistical import of all of this. They said, our newest national poll finds that Congress only has a 9% favorability rating, with 85% of voters viewing it in a negative light. We've seen poll after poll over the last year talking about how unpopular Congress is, but really, what's the difference between an 11% or a 9% or a 7% favorability rate? So we decided to take a different approach and test Congress's popularity against 26 different things. And what we found is that Congress is less popular than cockroaches, traffic jams, and even Nickelback. They say things like this: it's gross to have lice, but at least they can be removed in a way that, given the recent re-election rates, members of Congress evidently can't. Lice 67, Congress 19. Brussels sprouts may have been disgusting as a kid, but evidently they're now a lot less disgusting than Congress. Brussels sprouts 69, Congress 23. The NFL replacement refs may have screwed everything up, but voters think Congress is screwing everything up even worse. Replacement refs 56, congressmen 29. The breakdowns among Packer fans might be a little bit different.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And I think it's in a sort of good humor, but it's also interesting. Colonoscopies, 58%. Congress, 31%. Carnies, 39%. Congress, 31%. France, 46%. Congress, 37%. Genghis Khan, 41%. Congress, 37%. And yes, cockroaches, 45%. Congress, 43%.
Yeah, I think sampling error could definitely explain the Nickelback result. some little fan base. But honestly, I would be curious how different that is from ever. My sense is that at least as long as my political awareness has been, something that's been the case for Congress in general.
But this is an all time. This is even sampling errors and things. This is an all time low.
Yeah.
9 to 11%. Congress has never been more despised than this. But the numbers were not that much better before the election. So that brings back what you said earlier. Everybody else's congressperson is the problem, but not ours.
Right.
You know, Paul Brown is a fine, upstanding Christian man. And if Congress was full of Paul Browns, why, we'd have ourselves a Congress then. I've even got a Paul Brown story up here somewhere.
You know, there was a write-in campaign for Darwin against Paul Brown.
Yes.
I gather it didn't work, but.
But it's no, the it didn't work. But by the same token, the fact that they had to run a write-in. I mean, there was no. There was no Democrat.
Right,
there was no Democratic.
Who's been dead for over a century. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was no Democratic nominee, John.
Right.
But yeah, there is no, that's not it. No, I saw a Paul Brown story here, and I'm looking for it because it was insane.
He's a co-sponsor on the Stockman bill, by the way.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
Classy bunch, those. Oh, there he is. Yeah. Paul Brown wants to cut flood preparedness funding in the Hurricane Sandy aid package.
Oh, yeah.
They take his amendments, remove $19.5 million to study future flood risks, and, because we can't upset these people, he also wants to remove $3 million for oil spill research related to catastrophic flooding.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, the oil thing, obviously, the oil industry does nothing wrong. And the flooding thing, he doesn't like any flood to be more impressive than the one in his book. So.
Well, remember, that research, that's all based on science, and science is lies from the pits of hell. Right, John?
Yeah, from a physician, yeah.
Yeah. I could just imagine going into his office. Oh, yeah, you've got it all. Yeah, I see what's wrong. Demons.
Oh.
You've got some ill humors and a little black bile working for you there.
Yeah, poor ladies. I know. Not a chance.
Yeah. What is it that compels male gynecologists to want to run for a Republican congressional seat?
There are a lot of them, and it's disturbing, and I shudder to think what their waiting rooms might look like.
I can't imagine even letting libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul look at my eyeballs, let alone anything else.
Exactly.
And if you just want the chuckle of the night, this came from over at Yahoo News, news.yahoo.com. Just search Rand Paul swims in the Dead Sea.
Rand Paul swims in the Dead Sea.
Yes.
Will do.
Because seeing Rand Paul smeared with Dead Sea mud standing in the Dead Sea with his floral print swim trunks. Oh, well, all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it, John.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Well, listen, Bob, we need to get out of your way here. Thanks for taking the call, and really appreciate the work you're doing there.
Oh, it's an absolute joy to be up here, and thank you for allowing me to lay out a little bit more detail there. I really appreciate it. And have yourself a good evening.
You too. All right. Hi. Goodbye.
Bye now. That's our good buddy, Dr. John. And let's see. Let's keep it rolling. And is Jim back, Agnes?
I'm right here, Bob.
There you are. Sorry we lost you earlier.
Well, that's okay. How are you?
Here I sit in the forbidden city, so.
I see.
It's not nearly as much fun as being home.
Oh well.
You know, I'm in Washington D.C., the home of the $12 hot dog.
C'est la guerre. But nonetheless, pursuant to, well, the last comment about swimming in the Dead Sea, you know, there are a lot of people who use that as a spa because of the salinity and the mineral content of the waters. It's considered pretty beneficial against certain skin diseases. You know, kind of like swimming in the ocean.
Yeah, you mean things like psoriasis, eczema.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's no joke as far as that's concerned. You know, the mineral contents of that lake, upon which you can probably float or walk on it, they're so high, do have certain hygienic capabilities and curative.
And that's why he's got this mud on him, but it's just sort of smeared indiscriminately, Jim. And he's got
That's wonderful. He should be nude. That's what I'd like to see. He should be totally nude. He was practically nude mentally when he was in that thing with Bruno. So, I mean, you know.
No, that was his daddy. That was Ron.
Oh, well, you know.
This here is the young scion of the clan.
Well, I guess the wood doesn't fall too far from where it's chipped from the tree, now does it?
No, this is the daddy of the kid who got liquored up on the flight between Lexington, Kentucky, and Charlotte, North Carolina last week. And was so drunk he had to be taken into custody.
Hmm. Well, that's bad.
And, as an added bonus, was underage.
Well, what can I say?
Thank God for those family values Republicans.
Oh, yeah. I want to go back to something that was mentioned earlier, and I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but it refers to the Russian conflict in Berlin when they took the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to defend that to the last breath in my body. Because after what the Germans did to them, when the orders for Operation Barbarossa were cut before June 22nd, 1941, Adolf Hitler and his staff said, this is one war that will not be connected or conducted in a nightly fashion, which meant that these people were to be exterminated. And the Russians lost 20 million dead in World War II. Leningrad, at the height of the siege, was losing 3,000 X number, plus number, a day from starvation. And I can't blame the Russian army, particularly when they had the guidance of their commanders saying, do what you will or whatever. This is the fortunes of war, particularly when they were attacked, and they were, the attack was unprovoked. It was just Adolf Hitler's part to exterminate that entire part of the world, and he considered them Untermensch or subhuman. And even after the rapes occurred in Berlin in 1945, there were Russian soldiers who came back to give to the women, or even before the rape took place, in many cases, they were given food, they were given sustenance, and even protection. Now that's part of the history, and it can't be debated.
Well, actually, we can have a discussion. That's the whole purpose of this
program. I don't
want
to have a discussion about that because I know my facts there.
I understand that, Jim. But the issue that was raised was the rather cavalier approach of saying that that the women of Berlin upon the arrival of the Russians had rape coming to them.
Well,
and I just
I wasn't a part of the Soviet high command authority, and I didn't give the orders for them to behave in that way. But what I'm trying to say is, in many cases, there were acts of kindness bestowed upon the German citizens of Berlin that were not bestowed upon the Russian citizens of Kiev, Rostov, Kharkov, and Leningrad. And I want to make that point very strongly. And if there's anybody out there who doesn't like what I'm saying, I don't care.
Well, it's like Texas Betsy asked. She says, but what did the women of Berlin have to do with that?
Well, let me tell you, Berlin was never particularly a city that was in favor of Adolf Hitler. As a matter of fact, when the elections were held for the war, only 1 in 4 voted for Hitler. The Russians didn't realize the electoral statistics of pre-war Berlin. Berlin was a wide-open city. It was wild. And Hitler wanted to take it. And nonetheless, you know, unfortunately, such are the fortunes of war, particularly when you attack a country the way Adolf Hitler did with his Einsatzgruppen and treated those people much worse than he treated the Western nations. And that was my point in making that statement. I don't condone rape. And if I had been a Russian soldier, I don't know what I would have done. You have these guys coming from Siberia. You have them coming from everywhere. Because the Russian Navy or Army or Air Force or the Russian people are extremely heterogeneous. They are a mixed group of people. And
they cover the better part of the biggest part of two continents. So
11 time zones, exactly. And if it had not been for the Siberian legions who came back from the east, Moscow would have fallen in October of 1941. And if it had not been for the Russians, who killed 7 out of 8 every German soldier that died, I dare say that the war had come out a lot differently. And so there are some things in war that happen, just like the story that you put out about the gang rape, which was not true.
Yeah, it turned out, well.
Yeah, which provoked me to saying that. Did I defend rape in that case? No. Look on the transcripts and you'll see that I didn't.
Well, sadly, we don't have transcripts, Jim, but no, that story was not true. The issue taken, however, was the approach that that somehow the brutalization of a civilian populace was acceptable, and that was the exception that was taken to the remark.
I don't know about that, Bob, but you know, the first casual of any type of war is the truth. So it's hard to say what you can really believe and what you really can't, and that's my axiom when I hear stories like this. And you know, it's not all true, it's not all false. I mean, you know, the first casualty of any war is the truth, and of course the second will be other people who had nothing to do with it. But I will defend the Russian people and their right to defend themselves and their right to retake what
I don't think that was an issue in the complaint that was lodged.
Well, whatever, but as far as the complaint is lodged, you know, was it necessary? No. My defense of Mrs. Clinton, was it necessary for me to be sniped at by because of that? No.
Nobody was sniping, Jim.
Oh,
we
yes.
We have conversations here, and we do disagree from time to time, but we do struggle not to be disagreeable in the process.
Well, there's some people who can be pretty disagreeable, and I will admit I can be pretty disagreeable myself, particularly when you step on my toes, which isn't very often. We go back a long ways, Bob Kincaid, and you know damn well where I stand on certain things.
I do indeed. Well, you know, we're getting some good input on this. Texas Betsy pointing out, she said, you know, we're against the idea of raping civilians, not the fact of what the Russians may or may not have done. On the other hand, Ron in Raleigh writes in and he says, the orders came down from Joseph Stalin to stop the rapes, and they stopped immediately. No fan of Uncle Joe's, says Ron, but facts are facts.
There it is. That's the reason I was trying to say this, and I didn't get a chance to say it, that eventually it was stopped because it was creating a lot of problems for areas in which Stalin wished to control later on, East Germany.
Yeah, because he had a long range plan.
Well, of course he did. I mean, he was very, very, you know, even though he may have been a fool to have trusted Adolf Hitler, anybody would have fooled to trusted that asshole. But nonetheless, he did have certain, there was certainly a method to his madness. And in certain cases, he was extremely wise and circumspect for being the poor Georgian boy from Tbilisi or whatever his hometown was. I'm sure someone will correct me on that, too.
Probably not. Well, Jim, very well. I appreciate it. And you have yourself a good
night.
I'm
sure you
do. All right. Bye now. Jim calling from not too awfully far from home there in West Virginia. The lines are open. 304-658-3333 is the number. If you want to get involved if you've got a nomination for More In Monday or anything that you want to bring to the conversation. This is interesting. Juanita, our second Juanita, says, Dear Bob, that picture of Rand Paul was definitely meant for public distribution. He's still wearing his toupee. Really? Is that a rug? That's one I hadn't heard. I'll be darned. So we're going to take a break and rejoin the conversation after the break. Just a little reminder, we are very, very close to meeting this evening's fundraising goal before show's end, which would be a wonderful thing to have happen. We are about... we're about $30 away, last I checked, about $30 away from meeting this evening's fundraising goal, and it would be wonderful if we did. Thank you very kindly to those of you who have helped so immeasurably in this effort. It's how we keep all this going. It never ceases to amaze me, the stories that come in, and I want to make sure that I share one with you after the when we come back. I was profoundly moved when I read this, and like I said, this is special. So jump right in if you want to. This is Conversation Radio on America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. The number is 304-658-3333, and we will be back in just a few short minutes. You're not.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. 4 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The website new and redesigned, courtesy of John Fox. Thank you again, John. And thank you again to Dr. John for reminding me to kind of bring y'all up to speed with what's going on here with the AIC campaign. The website is brand new. You can go there and look now, AIKACT.org. You will see just all kinds of stuff, and it'll begin to grow now. With new information to put on the page, and some really, really neat interactive features, the ability to look up your Congress, your congressional representative, your senator's contact information, that kind of thing, and get word to them that you want to see the AIC Act not only reintroduced, but vigorously supported, passed, and signed into law. AIKACT.org. A couple of stories to share coming out of the last hour. One listener who prefers to remain anonymous says, "My grandmother was raped and then whored out to Russian soldiers, and then raped in all in her teens. And it had lasting effects unto the third generation. This was the big secret. Her baby brother had told when he was 80 and she was 85. It was how she kept three brothers safe." And then this, and I'm not going to... Well, one of our mics wrote this the other day, and I wanted to make sure I shared it with you. Because when things like this come in, they're as much or more about the community that you and we have built than about anything that I do. And it shows the depth of feeling and the depth of interconnectedness that this community is. Bob, since the holidays, I've been meaning to email or call to tell you how much The Horn means to me. But rather than just say that the show is great and unique, I'm going to give you an example of why it is so special and unique. I have two sons. The older is 3.5 years old, and my youngest is 1.5. My oldest is gender variant, although my wife just learned the term gender creative, and we like that term a little better. When he was very little, he loved to sit up on our bed and watch my wife put her makeup on. He's always loved movies with princesses in them. About a year ago, he started asking my wife if he could wear her dresses, really a silky tank top, which on him are dresses. A few months ago, we were in Target when he saw a toddler-sized blue dress with Cinderella on the front, and his face lit up. When he asked us for that princess dress, we couldn't say no. He wears it almost every evening now. Since then, he has asked for necklaces and earrings, just cheap plastic clip-on stuff, and we sometimes buy them. He plays with my wife's old Barbie dolls, and he still loves to watch my wife put on makeup. There are times when he behaves like a typical 3-year-old boy. The thing he wanted most for Christmas was a toy pirate ship, and he loves the Jake and the Neverland Pirates cartoon on Nick Jr., but he also really identifies with girl characters, and more evenings than not, ends up in a dress by the end of the day. And Bob, I have never, until right now, told anyone else outside my immediate family and some church members about this. No one at work, none of my friends from college know. Even some family members don't know. We have to be very selective about who we tell. We are fortunate to be part of a small Episcopal church with several same-sex couples, so this really isn't an issue for most of the people with whom we worship. It's ridiculous because most people wouldn't think twice about a little girl who likes to wear pants and play with toy cars. But we live in a country in which gender-variant people are bullied and ostracized, and my wife and I are terrified of how that world is going to treat him if he continues to like to wear dresses and jewelry, or if he's gay. We are already trying to network with people in the area who are in a similar situation. Research indicates that something like 80% of gender-variant boys grow up to be gay, and we're fine with him possibly being gay. My wife is fine with him wearing a dress. To be completely honest, it's still hard for me to deal with sometimes because I just can't relate. There are times when I want to go play catch with him, and he wants to play inside with his dolls. But I love him, and I am terrified about him getting teased, bullied, depressed, suicidal. But I know that you and the Horn family would accept him. And I know that if the whole Horn family met up somewhere and I brought my son in his princess dress, he would be accepted and loved. So thank you for building this little corner of the world where there's no hatred or intolerance. Our love to the Kincaids and the Horn families. Signed, Mike. I've had that on my mind ever since I received it. Because those are the little moments we didn't know we were setting out to build, but that we all together did build. And as much or more than anything else, justifies the ongoing existence of this endeavor. I'm guessing, Agnes just sent me a message, how beautiful, she said. I'm guessing if I know my lovely wife as well as I think I do, she's probably sniffling a little bit right now. I did the first time I read it. It's okay. Marty writes in. He says, Mike's son would have my respect for walking his own path his way, blazing a trail some wouldn't be able to understand. You know, one of the things about privilege, whether it be male privilege or white privilege or pick a privilege, is that when one is imbued with the privilege and chooses to question it, well, Mike's right. The response can be hateful, brutal, nasty. So thank you, Mike, for those words and for sharing and for making this little community just a little bit closer. It's about 13 minutes past the hour. Again, a reminder for tomorrow, no show tomorrow night. We will be going, Ferg and I will be going, as well as a number of other folks who are active in the struggle against mountaintop removal. We'll be going to attend a memorial and celebration of the life of Joan Mulhern, a dear friend of ours who worked absolutely tirelessly to see justice done in Appalachia. Part of a magnificent group that by the name of Earth Justice. You can find them at earthjustice.org. Absolutely instrumental in helping us create the AIC Act and get as much done with it as we did in the very limited amount of time that remained in that bizarre, mercifully recently ended last Congress. So, no show tomorrow night. And then we'll pick it up again and get back to work on Wednesday and show Thursday. And it remains to be seen how quickly I can get home on Friday. Now, back to the business at hand. More Ann Monday. And, of course, your nominations or your thoughts, your calls, if you wish to jump in at 304-658-3333. Your thoughts, of course, are always welcome. I've got a big string of more Anns. Because that happened, I guess more Ann Monday comes after what, Silly Sunday? I mentioned it earlier. Is that you sit down to try to figure out who the biggest morons in the Congress are, and pretty soon you realize you've entered a swamp. Because just as quick as you think, oh, well, right there. Yeah, Michelle Bachmann, Steve King says, no, me. And then Marsha Blackburn runs out and tries to explain to the world that we can't do anything about civilianized military-style weapons because somebody might decide then to, what, kill 26 people with a hammer. Imagine this. You don't have to imagine. It's real. I mentioned this talking with Dr. John. In the days and weeks that have followed, months that have followed Hurricane Sandy, There have been a number of heartbreaking stories. And there have been attempts to learn why some of the things happened that did happen there. It's not just because it was a bad storm. And one of the things that we do as human beings is to try to learn after events have transpired. So, yes, There are studies proposed and those studies would go toward understanding how to minimize damage in coastal communities when such storms hit. Enter Paul Brown of Georgia, the man who said that science comes from the pits of hell. After letting New Jersey and New York go hang fire, the Republicans in the Congress finally appear to be moving toward doing something about the Sandy relief bill that was passed and waiting on them, passed by the Senate and ready to roll. All they had to do was take a simple vote. A simple vote. But the deficit hawks, and by the way, Paul Krugman has been indicating lately that the deficit problem may actually be a non-problem now, but a Republican will never let a perfectly good phony baloney crisis pass him by if there's an opportunity to screw working people and the working poor and anybody with less than them, right to the wall. Paul Brown of Georgia, that also has an Atlantic coast prone to being hit by hurricanes, Paul Brown says that studying ways to minimize the damage of monster storms is wasteful spending. Brown has proposed 8 separate amendments to the upcoming Sandy relief bill, 2 of which would remove $22.5 million to study future flood risks and oil spill research. He has other amendments that would eliminate $111 million in funding for a weather satellite data mitigation gap reserve fund. Yeah, that sure sounds like wasteful spending. All that the demonic from the pits of hell space satellite weather science. Yeah, demons. $25 million for better science leading to what? Improved weather forecasting? Well, we can't have that. That's wasteful spending. That's money just thrown away. And, of course, they're also squealing that there have to be offsets against the government of we the people acting in behalf of people hammered by disastrous storms. Moran Monday. You remember the Costa Concordia cruise ship? You remember the captain that bailed out, that abandoned ship ahead of his own passengers? Well, Marty has a nomination of Costa Concordia Captain Francesco Schettino. Schettino. My Italian pronunciation is a little off. Francesco Schettino. He gave an interview on the one-year anniversary of the Costa Concordia disaster. And he said the disaster happened not because of anything he did, but because his helmsman didn't properly understand the orders he gave for steering. He said if the helmsman had understood correctly, the ship would have sailed past and nothing would have happened. If we had not turned, we would not have hit anything. And then he blamed the person in charge of the radar. Well, the person in charge of the radar was supposed to say that we had land in front of us. I was told that we were fine. I think Captain Schettino needs to move to the United States because, well, he sounds positively Republican. It's always somebody else's fault. What a moron. But, yeah, the morons you have always with you. Ooh, I just ran across that picture of Rand Paul again. I got to get through that. Let's see here. Yeah, this is kind of hard to get away from. Let's see, the NRA wants 4-year-olds learning to shoot with an iPhone app, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there's more than just guns that are on the minds of right-wing Republicans. And thank God for the state of Texas, I suppose. For keeping priority. Now, Texas has more uninsured children than any other state in the union. But that's not slowing down Bill Zedler. Anybody in Texas will know who this guy is. In a state that produces its more than its fair share of deranged right-wing lawmakers, this guy's gone pro. You know, you remember what Dr. Hunter Thompson said, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. He's a state representative. So he hasn't reached his heart's desire and joined the fun in the Congress yet. He's still working in Austin. So with all of those uninsured children, all of the various problems that beset the state of Texas, Bill Zedler, a Republican from Arlington, is on the job. He's filed a new bill that he wants passed, and frankly, come on, this thing's going to pass now, isn't it? That will require employees at sexually oriented businesses, including exotic dancers, as they're called, to get a license and display it while working. Because Bill Zedler loves him some job creators, just not the ones who create jobs that are performed, you know, naked. In explaining the rationale, if we may call it that, behind his idea, Zedler said, "They won't want to get a license as a stripper from the state of Texas. I think it would keep a lot of girls from getting involved in that lifestyle and basically wrecking their lives. Because, you know, they'd be far better off out on the street, right? This will force everyone to clean up their act. Overall, it will be a benefit to everyone concerned." Reckon she can just get her license tattooed on? Texas's 83rd legislative session of its entire history has recently gotten underway. And this is what is on Bill Zedler's mind. Let's see. What would you have to go through to get a license, a stripping license? So you have to be at least 18. You have to complete a course about human trafficking. You can't have been convicted of crimes like prostitution, obscenity, public lewdness, or sexual assault. But the non-sexual nudist camps are exempted, as are massage therapists and chiropractors. You see where this is going, don't you? Yep, every strip joint in Texas is going to become a chiropractic clinic. Now, if you're nude modeling at college, especially if you're nude modeling at a good Christian college like maybe TCU or Baylor or SMU, now you won't have to get a license there either. As long as there's only one nude model at a time. More than two? Nope, sorry. Going to have to get the tattoo. Zedler said, as far as wearing the license is concerned, well, the dancers could wear it around the neck or on their shoes or attached to a headband. Wouldn't you love to see where this cat goes on a Saturday night? Because I'm guessing it's not to the sewing circle. And the dancers could no longer call themselves by names like, Capricorn or Chestnut. No, they'd have to have their real names on their licenses. No more of that. Performance nom de plume. Yeah, that's a good one, Texas Betsy. Moran Monday is Moran Monday because it follows on the heels of Stupid Sunday. How true. Let's see, who else? What else? Oh, paranoia alert. I screwed up earlier and said Glenn Beck when I meant to say Alex Jones. Well, I guess I was channeling. Because the Beckerhead actually has a new book out. the number one best-selling author, Glenn Beck, Agenda 21.
With Harriet Park.
Really? Yeah. Crazy. This will be one of those things that shows up in the bestseller list with that little dagger next to it that shows that it was bought in bulk by right-wing think tanks and will be widely distributed to Dollar Trees and Dollar Generals near you soon. Yeah, Agenda 21 is a plan for life in the 21st century. But it's a nefarious plot by those blue helmet people. It's a plan for ensuring that economic growth doesn't stifle the environment. It seeks what is called international cooperation to accelerate sustainable development in developing countries. But it has absolutely driven the paranoia of the right wing through the roof. And so, the Beckerhead has a book. And right-wing dominated state legislatures everywhere are going nuts. Yeah, by the way, the Repiglicans are also upset about the Law of the Sea Treaty and the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disability. Right? Yeah. Ron and Raleigh with an email. I got an idea. Bob, maybe you could make the stripper license part of the costume. A cape, perhaps. I believe Texas has more strip clubs than any other state. P.S. Stripper name. Misty Dawn. Oh, that's nice. Thanks, Ron. Checking out an email from Marty real quick. Oh, dear God. Yeah. How about that? Slappy Thomas has said a word in court. We're so proud. The BBC reporting that Slappy Thomas, who has not asked a single question in the Supreme Court for nearly 7 years, finally spoke to a lawyer presenting a case. The magic words, well, he did not. In a joke about Ivy League law school graduates. Reminds me of that story about Silent Calvin Coolidge and a woman who was at a state dinner of some sort, who looked at the president then. You know, that was on the front end of driving the American economy into the ditch in the 1920s. And she said, "Mr. President, I told my friend here that I bet her that I could get you to say three words." And Coolidge looked at her and said, "You lose." Jeez. Oh, by the way, Ron and Raleigh reminded me after my conversation with Dr. John. Yes, Kay Hagan of North Carolina did get sleazed by Liddy Dole. Ms. Hagan is one of the wealthiest people in Congress. Her politics, however, are only slightly to the left of Erskine Bowles. Wow. And in a way, I guess I've been... Oh, wait. Yeah, this is more Ann Monday material. If you're ever in New Bern, North Carolina, no matter how hungry you might be, as you pass by the Stingray Cafe, keep driving. Maybe you can keep going south till you wind up at, Taco Sid, and you can keep driving there, too. Taco Sid of Columbia, South Carolina, does not like immigrants. Undocumented immigrants. You may recall the conversation from last week. Well, a little to the north, and New Bern, North Carolina, is the Stingray Cafe, and they don't like the gay people. Ariel and Shawnee McPhail went to the Stingray Cafe on December the 4th. They had been married in another state. Of course, North Carolina does not recognize their love and commitment one to the other. They paid their tab, and they left the restaurant. And that's when the owner of the restaurant, one Ed McGovern, showed up and shoved a paper into their hands. What's this? Well, they read it, they opened it, and what it said, it was handwritten, and Ed McGovern had written to them the following. God said in the last days that man and woman would be lover of self more than lover of God, that man and woman would have unnatural affection for one another. Then the coming of the Son of Man, who is Jesus. I'll bet. Jesus is coming. Pass him a tissue. So please, look at your life. See how it hurts everyone around you. Ask the Lord to open your eyes before it is too late. The love of Christ. P.S. My daughter also was gay. It destroyed her life and my grandson. Now, because this letter could not have been much less literate had it been scrawled in crayon, we don't know if that means that his daughter has passed away or even that if his grandson is still alive. And all it is another day in America. Another day when two people who love each other can't even sit down to lunch without being accosted by some bigoted, prejudiced, homophobic, horse's hind end who has just spent the last 30 minutes trying to figure out what they do at their, what do them lesbians do? Upon being interviewed, Ed McGovern declared that he wrote that letter and gave it to them because he didn't approve of their kissing. Never mind the fact that the McPhail couple says that they were not kissing. Let's see. You've got a fundamentalist Christian who says they were kissing, and it prompted him to write a letter for the love of Christ. And you've got another version of the events in which the non-fundamentalist same-sex married couple said, no, we're just holding hands. Who do you believe? Who would be more likely to tell a lie under these circumstances? And by the way, upon inquiry, Ed McGovern said, yeah, I've given other lesbians a letter, too. Today, brothers and sisters, the lesson will come from Paul's letter to the lesbians, 3 Lesbians 12 and 24. And the lesbians did sit down to have a decent dinner at the Stingray Cafe, and yea, verily, the angel of the Lord, Ed McGovern, did give unto them a letter poorly spelled. So God inspired Ed McGovern, but he did not inspire him to learn to write. So what do we call this? Is this writing in tongues? No tongues, right? Yeah. Jeebus. Because we can't have the lesbians just sitting around eating lunch and not being reminded how lesbian they are. Because, yeah, somebody's got to do it. Tim from L.A. reminding me, especially after Friday. Oh, by the way, a reminder. Dr. John did a masterful job of refuting the idiotic silliness of right-wingers who, what was his name, Montgomery Ward or whatever, who showed up on CNN to argue that if only the slaves had had guns, we wouldn't have had slavery. Remember that? Well, our buddy Horst, hearing my plea that this be made available for passing around, clipped it out and put it up on his YouTube page. If you go to YouTube and look for the channel of look for Horzac's channel, Horzac, you'll find John's masterful deconstruction of that little moment of right-wing idiocy. And I was reminded of that when I just saw this email come in from Tim from L.A. He notes that there's one of those demotivational posters that's been posted on the Facebook page of fundamentalist bobblehead Victoria Jackson. It is a photograph of Japanese Americans behind barbed wire fences during the World War II years. You know, it's an internment camp. And the caption merely says, gun control, because our government would never turn on its citizens. Right. Because what we needed was for all the perfectly innocent, absolutely America-loving, patriotic, Japanese-American citizens, what they needed to do was start shooting at the army. Because then they wouldn't have been put in those internment camps. But right-wing teabagger idiots, the likes of Victoria Jackson, are challenged to figure out, of course, that no, they would not have been put in internment camps. They would have been mowed down and shot dead. Geniuses, aren't they? Just absolute geniuses. What are you going to do? I mean, what we can try to do is combat this idiocy, this foolishness, this manifest abject stupidity. But this stuff gets around the planet before the truth gets its shoes on. I think we're going to save, and I hope we will have a meaningful discussion of it instead of me just sitting and filibobstering. I hope we will have a meaningful discussion, perhaps on Wednesday night's program. I hope we will have a meaningful discussion of the life and death of Aaron Swartz. This past Friday, Aaron Swartz committed suicide. If you don't know who he is, Google him. You'll find out. He was a child prodigy computer genius. And he was hounded to death by the government of the United States of America. I hope we will have a conversation about just what kind of country this is that would so torment a young man in the name of the law. And perhaps have another conversation about what kind of a legal framework would not only permit that, but encourage that to be done. That's for Wednesday. It's very near to being time to get out of here. I'm awfully glad that we did manage to get on the air this evening, that we got to have our conversation. Because I didn't want to go too many days without one, especially knowing there's going to be a couple missed. Like I said, no show tomorrow night. And then next week, no show Friday the 25th or Monday the 28th. On the 25th, I'll be flying out to San Francisco. And on the 28th, I'll be returning home. Actually, I'll be returning here to D.C. So, mark your calendars, what have you. And thank you again for those who have contributed to help us make today's fundraising goal. We got very close. We got very close. We're only $30 away from reaching the goal, and hopefully we will before the night's out. Don't forget to go and have a look at the new ACHE Act website, ACHEACT.org, ACHEACT.org. Take action. It really is a help to us while we're here working to have you advocating there from home, so that when we knock on a door, so to speak, they know that they've already had their phones rung. ACHEACT.org. And if you want to send me a note and just let me know that you have called your congressman, let me know who the congressperson is or the senator's office is, and we will follow up. Because one of the best things about working with the ACHE Act is the fact that we damned well intend to see this bill passed. This is not an exercise. This is not something diversionary. We're not so bored we just need something to do. The ACHE Act is the only piece of legislation that has ever been offered that would give the long-suffering people of Appalachia some degree of respite from the hell-on-earth torment of mountaintop removal that would hopefully begin to bring a close to the cancer deaths, the heart disease deaths, the babies born gasping for a decent breath. No other law has ever been proposed that would do that. And if anybody tells you that they've got a bill that would end mountaintop removal and it's not the ACHE Act, they're probably fibbing just a little bit. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks ever so much to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. You know, Ben almost single-handedly saved progressive radio by creating the White Rose Society and making it available on the Internet. Thank you, Ben. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know. The men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thanks again to all of you. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And Rick Smith is next on the Horn.